Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Talking Football. If you've missed the first two episodes, well, where have you been? You can listen to interviews with US-based Scottish Academy coach Ali Bain and footballer-turned-author Julian Broddell over on our Podbean site, but also now on iTunes. And of course, you can find us on Twitter at @talking_football and Facebook as well. This week's a proper nostalgic look back in time to the early 2000s and one of the craziest eras in Dundee Football Club's 126-year history. I chat to Graeme Strachan, a football writer who's just released his debut book, The Bird and the Feather, which looks back on the time the Dark Blues had two world footballing icons playing for them in the form of Claudio Caniggia and Fabrizio Ravanelli. The book's had some terrific reviews already, so I was keen to find out what readers can expect. So sit back and enjoy this week's edition of the Talking Football Podcast. Welcome everyone to this week's episode of Talking Football. It's a proper trip down memory lane this week as we look back on a truly bonkers time at Dundee Football Club when they had two world footballing icons in their ranks. I'm delighted to be joined by the author of the recently released book, The Bird and the Feather. It's Scottish football writer Graeme Strachan. Good evening, Graeme.
Good evening, Derek.
And can you tell us a little bit about Dundee back then, prior to the year 2000, what it was like as a club back then?
Yeah, I mean, Dundee were a kind of yo-yo team, really, throughout the 1980s, heading into the 1990s. And, I mean, Dundee found themselves in the early 90s in the doldrums of the First Division. There was then a takeover bid by the Canadian businessman Ron Dixon, which seemed to bring good things for Dundee, but they kind of frizzled out as well. So, I mean, Dundee at that time, we were dealing with players being bought for a set of tracksuits and £1,000. That was kind of where Dundee were at that stage. But certainly, I mean, 2 years before Claudio Caniggia signed in 2000, you know, Dundee had almost gone out of business at that time. So it was a real, you know, it wasn't the greatest of times for Dundee or its supporters.
No, and what were you doing back then, Graeme?
Well, I mean, I started working at the Courier, which is the newspaper I still work at, the Dundee Courier, in 1999. So, I mean, I was kind of in the 90s, going through school, going through college, et cetera, et cetera. But as I said, I mean, the first year of my kind of job, just getting my feet in the door, and then suddenly we had, you know, as you said, the bonkers, the excitement of everything that went on. And as a kind of pounding the beat news reporter, we suddenly found that sport and football, and Dundee in particular, were suddenly moving to the front pages. And now, you know, we were all involved in some fantastic stories, you know, over the next few years.
The new owner, of course, arrives on the scene. What was made of the new guy that arrived in Dundee?
Yeah, I mean, this is Peter Marr and Jimmy Marr, who were brothers. They owned a nightclub in Dundee. They were successful businessmen. They were coming in to invest money into Dundee just before, I think, 1998, when they came in. Dundee at that time were in the First Division, and although Dundee were at the top of the league, they sacked the manager and brought in Jockey Scott, who was a former manager of Dundee and also a Dundee legend as a player. So it was quite clear that they weren't, you know, shy. They would be prepared to make big decisions if they felt that they were needed. They didn't think Dundee were playing well at the time, despite being top of the First Division. So they made that change. Dundee get promoted at that stage. And that was kind of when we started to see this European flavour, this foreign flavour. There was a link-up with Steve Archibald. You remember the former Barcelona player.
Yeah.
Bernd Schuster, who was another former Barcelona player, was also involved. And it was really a model of bringing some European players over and kind of giving them a platform in the Scottish game, with obviously a view to moving them on at profit, both for the benefit of the agents and also for Dundee's benefits as well. So all that was kind of circling around just after the Marr brothers took over, and they ultimately got Dundee back to where they wanted, which was Premier League football after that first season in charge.
Looking for a manager, and Ivan Obinetti arrives on the scene. What sort of character was he?
He was a fun character, actually. He'd arrived with a great footballing pedigree. Himself and his brother Dario were well-established figures in Italy's Serie A. Ivano himself had won the Serie A with Sampdoria. He was also a former teammate of Michel Platini's at Juventus. And Dario was part of the great Roma team from the 80s, which, of course, got to the European Cup final against Liverpool. So, I mean, these guys were, they were big names. They were big players. They were big characters. They had been managing in the lower leagues in Italy, so they were very untested, but it was a gamble that the Marr brothers were prepared to take. And I think a lot of that gamble was down to the fact that they had this this enviable book of contacts from their time in Italy, and the hope was that they could bring some top players over with them. But Ivano himself was a charismatic guy. He was a great character. He struggled with early morning starts, as he said. he would call the Scottish Premier League Serie A. He had decent English. He also had a good background in British football, because he had played both at Tranmere and Grimsby. And he was probably mostly well known in Britain as the guy who had a plate of chicken wings thrown at him. That was by Brian Laws in 1996, after a bit of a battle in the dressing room after a match. So yes, he was a character, shall we say?
Yeah, he certainly was, and he brought a few characters into the club as players as well. Some big names were heading into Dens Park at that time.
He did. You're looking at the likes of Fabian Caballero, who came in, who was on the books of Arsenal. We started to see a South American flavour coming in. But, I mean, it was only 2 months into his tenure that Caballero had got injured in a derby game against Dundee United, and they were looking for a replacement. And, I mean, some of the names, even at that time, that were being suggested, Gianluca Vialli had just been sacked by Chelsea, and he was rumoured to be coming in to replace Caballero. But as I say, I mean, when Claudio Caniggia's name was first mentioned, nobody could believe that there was any chance that a guy of his stature, a guy who we'd watched at World Cups in 1990 and 1994, would come anywhere near Dundee. But sensationally, Ivano's contacts book came up trumps, and he arrived in Scottish football. It was an incredible time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember myself thinking it's absolutely unbelievable, because I can remember Caniggia, Italia 90 and what have you. Just for maybe our younger listeners, how big a name was this?
He was massive. He was one part of the greatest strike partnership in the world. He played alongside Diego Maradona in the late 80s and the early 90s for Argentina. At the 1990 World Cup in Italy, he was Argentina's star player, and I mean, basically dragged them kicking and screaming to the final. He was their top scorer, and along with Paul Gascoigne, he was probably the player of the tournament. And he was so recognisable. He had the long flowing blonde hair. He was a guy who'd been an athlete at school, so he had this peculiar running style where he kind of ran on his tiptoes, a bit hunched, and he had just pace to burn. He was such a fast player. And obviously after 1990, he signed for Roma in Serie A. He was a very big player in Serie A at that time. And then the 1994 World Cup, he strikes up another enviable partnership with Gabriel Batistuta, and you know, the two guys were formidable, despite the fact that it was an early exit for Argentina at that time.
Yeah, and so he stalks into Dens Park. I mean, what is it, the feeling in the city when a world footballing icon dons the dark blue shirt?
I think it was actually a signing that lifted the city. I mean, Dundee, you look at Dundee now, we have the V&A Museum on our doorstep, you know, tourism is booming, things are great. It was a very different city back then. In fact, Dundee was almost at risk of losing its city status because so many people were actually leaving the city. There was a bit of a cultural change in the background, but Caniggia's arrival, it honestly did, it lifted the entire city. The eyes of the world were now on Dundee. I mean, this signing made front page headlines in Argentina. It led the TV news in Argentina. I mean, this was box office. This was absolutely massive, Derek. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody was just walking a bit taller. You know, to have a guy that we'd seen, you know, on television on a Sunday on the Italian football on Channel 4. Yeah. Now here he was walking amongst us. And I mean, he turned up for his arrival at Dundee with his supermodel wife, who tottered up Tannadice Street in her leopard skin coat. And she immediately made buying a Scottish castle a top priority. So this was the kind of, you know, this was what we were dealing with here. This was a genuine superstar. This was a proper player. And the thing was, I mean, at that time, you look at Scottish football, there was millions of pounds being spent.
Yeah.
I don't think it was the fact that Caniggia came to Scottish football. I think it was the fact of his final destination. Had he gone to Rangers or Celtic, nobody probably would have batted an eyelid, but it was the fact that he came to Dundee. And the reason that he came to Dundee is he was a friend of Ivano's from his time in Italy, and he came over to help a friend. That was what this whole thing was. He wanted to help a friend. It wasn't going to be a long-term deal. It was meant to be a short-term deal. He was going to get his fitness up. He was going to look to go to Major League Soccer, you know, in March and kind of wind down his career with one big payday. But the minute that he arrives in Dundee, you know, he fell in love with the city and the city fell in love with him.
Yeah, you mentioned his good friend Diego Maradona there as well. There was a possibility that he could have been coming over as well, wasn't there?
There was. I mean, that was almost signed and sealed, as bizarre as it sounds. I mean, Caniggia's shirts were flying out of the club shop at this point, and one of them was an order from Diego Maradona. So he was really keeping an eye on his close friend. But, yes, there had been talks between Claudio, who'd actually initiated it, and Diego, which would have seen Maradona coming across to Dens Park to play for Dundee against Napoli in a glamour friendly. And all this was very much, you know, on the stocks. This was going to happen. But then, in typical Maradona fashion, he arrived in Napoli on business and immediately found himself in the middle of a tax scandal and was taken away by the awaiting authorities. So it never quite transpired that Maradona came to Dundee, unfortunately.
So Caniggia's running about and playing for Dundee. Can you remember what his performances were like? Were you sort of spellbound by how good he was?
His first performance for Dundee, I mean, it was Roy the Rover stuff, Derek. He wasn't fit enough to start against Aberdeen on his debut in a league game at Pittodrie. So he came on as a second-half substitute. Dundee at this stage were 1-0 up, but they were really up against it. They were down to 10 men. And with the last kick of the ball in the last minute, Georgie Nimzadze plays through Caniggia, who rounds the goalkeeper and slots the ball into the back of the net. And it was absolute delirium at Pittodrie. You know, here was a guy who had came with this huge reputation, and suddenly he had shown that he still had it. He still had pace to burn. He still had an eye for goal. And it was a sensational debut. And, you know, absolutely unforgettable moment as well when he scored that goal, and Dundee took all 3 points.
Yeah, and they beat the two Old Firm clubs away from home that season as well, didn't they?
They did, and the performance from Caniggia at Ibrox in that game, it was a 2-0 victory. That was actually the game where Dick Advocaat sat up and realised that he needed a player like Caniggia in his team. And, you know, if there was any doubts at that point that, you know, Advocaat wasn't going to sign Caniccia, then, you know, they were completely dispelled when he scored and just had a sensational performance against Rangers that year. And that was really where he had to step it up. You know, it's easy to score goals against the likes of Motherwell and St Mirren, with no disrespect to those clubs, but, you know, it comes when you're playing against the bigger clubs. And I think the other thing as well was, even the games that were, you know, Falkirk away at Brockville on a horrible night, you know, these are the games when you would kind of expect the stereotypical argument we hear about, you know, the foreign players, the South American players won't roll their sleeves up and be counted. But Caniccia, you know, it didn't matter what the occasion was. This was a guy who, you know, he had the fight, he had the desire and he had the drive. And he really was, you know, the top of his game. And, I mean, that season that he played at Dundee, it was only 25 games, but he was nominated for the Player of the Year award. And had it not been for Henrik Larsson, who had a record-breaking 52-goal tally, he would have won that that award. You know, that's how big his impact was on Scottish football in that season.
Yeah, certainly. You mentioned they had Caniccia, of course. You mentioned earlier on that Nemzadze, the Wansara, the Caballero and what have you. Are you maybe surprised they never done a bit better than mid-table?
I think that's the one thing that jumps out, is that Dundee had, you know, all these players, they played such great football, but it just didn't seem to come together in terms of a higher finish. And I mean, it was only on the last day of the season that they actually got the top six finish, just before the split. So, you know, they left it to the last game. And for the quality that was in that squad, you know, they should really have been looking for, you know, maybe not first or second, because Rangers and Celtic were so dominant. But, you know, certainly the potential was there for a third or fourth place finish and possibly even a cup, you know. I think, you know, there was injuries at certain times. You know, there was a bit of bad luck here and there as well. And I think the injury to Caballero was a huge blow for Dundee, because, you know, he did look like a guy that could really turn things. But again, had Caballero not been injured, we probably wouldn't have seen Caniccia at Dundee or in Scottish football. So it's sometimes these things happen for a reason, I suppose.
Yeah, Fabrizio Ravanelli pitches up in 2003. Is that sort of the peak bonkers, I'd imagine, when you see the white fella turning up?
I think it was. I mean, Caniccia was long gone at that time. He'd been gone for a couple of seasons. The thing was that the big spending didn't stop. The season after Caniccia left, Dundee bizarrely became the second most popular team in China behind Manchester United when they signed the Chinese captain Fan Zhi. And you have to remember as well, I mean, when Caniccia was here, we had Dundee games were being shown live in South America, Australia, New Zealand, even the West Indies. I mean, you know, West Indians who were brought up on a sporting diet of Brian Lara and Viv Richards were now watching Lee Wilkie and Willie Faulkner. You know, it was just incredible. So I think, you know, nothing surprised you on that journey, really. But, I mean, you know, some of the names that had been mentioned with signing for Dundee before Ravanelli actually came in were incredible, because by this stage, Giovanni Di Stefano, who was the Italian businessman stroke lawyer, who had came in, and at that time, I mean, the big spending had really caught up with Dundee. So at the start of the 2003-2004 season, you know, Dundee were in huge debts. They were looking for a white knight to ride in and save the day, and Di Stefano came in with big promises, and the Dundee owners brought him onto the board. And I mean, that first transfer window, they made bids for James McFadden, they made bids for Peter Crouch, Georgi Kinkladze, There was even a fishy bid to reel in Paul Gascoigne as well. Now, this bid was that Gaza, as we know, was an angling addict. He liked to fish, and Dundee thought that if they got him a house next to one of the city's well-stocked fishing locks, that he would decide that spending the season at Dundee would be absolutely right for him. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't see Gaza, and all these bids for the likes of Kincladze, Crouch, etc., fell by the wayside. So it was a disappointing transfer window for Dundee, but Fabrizio Ravanelli at that time was a free agent. He'd been let go by Derby. He was injured. He was getting his fitness back. He was training with Craig Burley at Coventry, and Dundee had signed Burley and then managed to bring Ravanelli to Dens Park as well. But I mean, by that time, you know, nothing could surprise the Dundee fans at that time, and it was just another bizarre moment in you know, Dundee's life at that time.
Yeah, I remember interviewing John Hendry, who played with Ravanelli at Middlesbrough back in the day. He says if he was chocolate, he'd eat himself. I mean, did you get that sort of impression that he's sort of Mr. Showbiz?
Well, it was incredible because I'd heard all those stories as well about, you know, when he was at Middlesbrough and he had four agents sat with him in the dressing room, and, you know, there was various other things that were mentioned as well. And, I mean, it has to be said, his reputation when he was at Middlesbrough was a prima donna. You know, he was this arrogant guy who, you know, was a troublemaker, really. But nothing could be further from the truth when he arrived in Dundee. Now, I don't know whether it was the fact that he was 34 at this stage, whether, you know, he could see the clock kind of ticking on his career, but he was a very humble man. When you spoke to him, nothing was too much trouble for him. He would, if you had an interview request, he would always try and grant it. He spoke very eloquently about the city. He liked the city, and he also used to stay behind as well to help some of the younger players at Dundee work on their ball skills, shooting skills, things like that as well. So it certainly wasn't the Maradona, the Ravanelli, I should say, of Middlesbrough. You know, this was a completely changed guy. And a lot of the young players at Dundee who were there at the time still speak so fondly and so highly of Ravanelli, you know, and kind of the help that he gave them at that time as well.
Yeah, he was something else. You mentioned Giovanni Di Stefano earlier on there. He was an interesting character, so to speak. Did you have many run-ins with him during his time at Dundee?
We had a lot of run-ins with him at the time. I mean, he was a character who, he was well known because he defended war criminals in court. He had links with the likes of Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, Slobodan Milosevic, Harold Shipman. You know, he was a strange guy to say the least. He called himself Italian. He spoke with a thick Cockney accent. He was a wheeler dealer wide boy. I think was quite right. But I mean, his first press conference at Dens Park when he became a director, he immediately denied that Saddam Hussein would become a season ticket holder at Dens Park. You know, it was just absolutely crazy. But, you know, I think, I mean, certainly when we started putting the book together and went back through old interviews, old transcripts, things like that, I mean, everything that Giovanni Di Stefano said was just a headline grabber, you know. Sadly for Dundee, he was all talk and no substance, which is kind of where the house of cards fell down in the end. But, you know, he was certainly a character, and at that time Dundee thought he was the saviour, and bringing Ravanelli to Dundee was one of the things that made the supporters, you know, really get behind Di Stefano as well. But he was some character, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, but was there maybe murmurings that when these guys are arriving on the scene that the club maybe can't sustain this long term, or were you thinking that way at all back then?
I think we were. I mean, you could see the way they were looking at it. I mean, they were trying to sign players who were not just great players on the park, but might also have something off the park. Now, Ravanelli is not somebody who you're going to sell on at 34 for a big fee.
No.
So you are obviously looking at things like shirt sales, you know, the grey wig sales, everything like that as well. And it was kind of the same with Caniggia. But, I mean, the model that was put in place was really to bring these guys in and then sell them on. But Dundee were very unlucky because, I mean, guys like Nimzadze were injured at the wrong time. Caballero, who at the start of that season had looked like a £5 to £7 million player, he was never the same after his injury. And it was the same with Juan Sara. You know, he had a dip in form. It was just a case of people being injured at the wrong time, and Dundee just couldn't sell these guys on. And I think, you know, by the time that Ravanelli came in, they were really clutching at straws. I think the debts were about £7 million at that time, and you know, Dundee were still getting gates of kind of 5,000-6,000, so you couldn't sustain it through the turnstiles either. So I think there were certainly murmurings at the start of that season that all was not well, which is why De Stefano came in. But, you know, Ravanelli's time, sadly, was quite short, as Dundee then headed into administration because they just couldn't sustain the losses that they were making at that time.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, of course, that went into administration. But, I mean, would you swap those entertaining few years for a more stable club? Or, I mean, it's a difficult one, really.
Yeah, I think it's the question that we ask you know, Dundee supporters all the time, and certainly since the books came out, folk have been talking about that, and you know, a lot of them wouldn't admit it publicly because their club almost went out of business, but you know, they speak so fondly about that time when, you know, even the impossible seemed possible. You know, it was a time where if a player was injured, the Baggio brothers would be linked with coming to Dundee, you know, and it didn't seem ludicrous. You know, there was in Ravanelli's time at Dundee, they played Perugia in the
UEFA Cup.
And Giovanni Di Stefano thought that they could sign Edgar Davids. Now, Davids at that time was on 90,000 a week at Juventus. He was a Dutch international, but he had fallen out of favour with Marcello Lippi. Now, Barcelona and Chelsea were waiting in the wings if he had, you know, been available. And this was seen by Giovanni Di Stefano as a chance for Dundee to sign this man. And Jim Duffy was told that he should leave his preparations for this European tie against Perugia and head to Turin and convince Edgar Davids to come to Dundee. You know, it's just incredible. When you think about it, you know, and this was only a month or so before the administrators came in, and there was still all this big talk of international players, international signings. So I think Dundee fans were a little bit surprised when it happened so suddenly, just because of what would seem previously.
Yeah, I mean, it was a time when clubs spent a lot of money, especially in Scotland. But I mean, even now, I mean, we report on the sad demise of Bolton and Bury behind the scenes. It shows you that lessons still not being learned, really, and the wrong people behind the scenes taking control of football clubs.
I think it is, and I mean, it's just, you know, it's financial management, I suppose. And although you're absolutely right, I mean, Dundee and Bolton on a kind of smaller scale, it's always about chasing that dream. You know, for Dundee it was about chasing Rangers and Celtic, it was about trying to get into Europe. For Bolton, you know, absolutely the same. But what you see is that you know, you either have to be then selling these players on or have this kind of conveyor belt that keeps coming through. But it's quite sad when these things happen, because, you know, they're community clubs, they've got great fan bases, great people around as well. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think we will see lessons learned, and you just need to look at the spending, even on a larger scale. You know, the Manchester Cities, the Barcelonas, Chelsea's, I mean, these clubs which have now had sanctions and things like that put on them, is that you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter what scale of the club it is, this kind of big spending, reckless spending, you know, lessons probably haven't been learned over the years.
Yeah, and I guess you struggle to sort of see a repeat for Dundee in the future, a sort of similar time like the time back in the early 2000s.
I think in terms of football on the park, I mean, you would struggle to see that again. I mean, I think the problem with Dundee was the mistakes. You know, they didn't learn those financial mistakes and then went into administration again, just a few years later. But certainly in terms of the quality of players and, you know, what we saw in the park, I mean, the only way now that teams like Dundee are going to get back to those kind of heights is bringing through their own players. You know, you're looking at academies, you're looking at young players, you're looking at things like that, because the money just isn't there now, unfortunately. And it's the same in even Rangers and Celtic now. I mean, they're both selling clubs, you know, really. I mean, if offers come in for guys, you know, they have to sell them. And that's just where we are at the moment. You know, all the money really is in the English Premier League and some of the other big leagues. But, you know, an incredible time for Dundee at that stage. And you know, the memories, we're approaching nearly 20 years since Kenny just signed. And, I mean, the memories are still so strong around here.
And, I mean, how much fun was it? Was it writing the book?
It was a lot of fun. And I think, you know, we've kind of laughed throughout this chat about things like Edgar Davids, the Baggio brothers, you know, the complete madness that has gone on. You know, the very mention of Dundee Football Club in the same breath as Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. You know, it's just, you know, these were crazy times. You know, Diego Maradona, all these things. I mean, they're all part of this story, which, you know, it was a three-year period between Caniggia joining and then administration and Fabrizio Ravanelli leaving. But, you know, it was a roller coaster ride, which of course it eventually came off the rails, but it was, I mean, the twists, the turns, the ups, the downs, it was absolutely incredible. And it was so much fun putting the book together and just remembering a lot of these times. And, you know, it just jumps out from every page, just how exciting a period of time it was, and also how bonkers a period of time it was as well. And it's a period of time that, I mean, Dundee fans will never forget, and I think Scottish football generally will never forget that time as well. I mean, you just need to type in Caniggia and Dundee's name into a Google News search engine, and, you know, it seems that every few months there's a fanzine or a website or a newspaper that's kind of reliving those kind of glory days. And you know, the world's attention was on Dundee at that time. The world's attention was on Scottish football at that time. You know, I don't know if Scottish football is still being shown live in West Indies, but it certainly was being at that time. And you know, just an incredible period of time. And the thing as well is that people, I think probably because of where Dundee find themselves now, you know, they're back in the First Division, they're back in the doldrums, you know, things aren't so great. People are enjoying reading about those times again, and, you know, we've had great praise for the book as well. I mean, one of Dundee's, I suppose, celebrity fans, the acclaimed football writer Paddy Barclay, has given us a really great review, you know, has recommended the book, and he enjoyed, you know, going back and remembering those times from yesteryear. And I think there's a lot of nostalgia caught up in the pages as well. And you know, that's a great thing for football fans. When your team's not doing so well, it'll be the same with Bolton fans. You know, at the minute, who'll look back, remember, you know, those times when Djorkaeff and Hierro and these kind of guys were there, and we were going to Anfield and we were going to Old Trafford, you know. And it's the same. It doesn't matter what the club is. You always kind of hark back to the glory days. And although you're absolutely right, Dundee should have certainly done better in terms of trophies or league positions in those times. But, you know, what a time it was to be alive and to enjoy Scottish football.
Yeah, certainly. You mentioned that the reaction's been really positive to the book. Have you any plans to write any more at all?
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, I think that what I've certainly found is that, you know, it's a treasure trove of, you know, we have a treasure trove of kind of archive material, and I think there's a lot of stories in there. Certainly Dundee stories, which are still to be written, and just football stories generally. I mean, Scottish football seems to have so many of them, whether it's, you know, George Best or Claudio Caniccia, Fabrizio Ravanelli. It just seems to attract the characters of not just football, but I suppose life itself. Mm. So, yeah, I think it would be quite nice to do something again in the future. But as I say, at the moment, really enjoying the reaction to the book that we've had. And, you know, it's just great that folk are really getting behind it and enjoying it as well.
Yeah. And finally then, Graham, how can people go and get a copy of it?
People can get a copy, The Bird and the Feather, Caniggia and Ravanelli's Dundee Adventures. It's available now on Amazon. Just have a search in the search engine for that. It's also available from the DC Thompson shop as well. Again, just a search engine for the book. You'll find that at our online shop. It's free delivery as well, and you will get change from £10, which you know, is good value, I would say, in anybody's money. Not as good value as the free transfer of Claudio Caniggia, but you know, it's certainly up there anyway.
It certainly is. Graham Strachan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Derek.
Well, that was episode 3 of the Talking Football podcast with Graham Strachan. I very much hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Remember, if you've missed the first two episodes, interviews with Ali Bain and Julian Broddle, you can catch up with them by visiting derekclarksports.co.uk/talkingfootball. We're also now on iTunes as well. And if you want to interact with the programme, our Twitter page is @talking_football. And we're on Facebook as well. Join me again next week for another episode of the Talking Football podcast, when I'll be joined by former Clydebank, Falkirk and Kilmarnock star John Henry. But for now, thanks for listening and take care.